Good afternoon. This we'll call to order the State Department's and Veterans Budget Division on Thursday, February 14th, 2013. It's about 3:05, and happy Valentine's Day to everybody. We've all been eating cookies all day, so we're probably, if we don't fall asleep, we'll all probably be giggling here. Members, today we have three budget reviews be presented to this committee. In your package, you're going to find an agenda, a spreadsheet, change items, and a fee schedule for the Secretary of State, spreadsheet, change items, and presentation by the Department of Veterans Affairs, and a spreadsheet and handout from the State Auditor. With that, we're going to begin, and we're going to start with Secretary Ritchie. And as always, Mr. Secretary, if you'd give your name and for the record, and you can start the review.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark Ritchie, Secretary of State. Thank you for this opportunity to finish up our presentation. You have a very short handout in your packet. It just gives you a reminder that we do four big things: business and consumer services, elections, public safety, and our Safe at Home program, and public engagement and information. In a normal year, there's about $14 million that goes from our office to the general fund. Been a few developments since January, our last presentation. One is we had another very, very high month for business filings, up nearly 4.5% from last year. It's the second highest January on record. That just is a signal to us that we will continue to grow in terms of what we are taking in, the services we're providing to our state's businesses. Our office got a couple national awards for our election administration. We feel good about that. But we had three big change items that the governor included in his budget that's presented to you, and I want to just quickly review those. Following along in the handout, the three were reduction in the funding for our business services. The second, the appropriation of the remaining Help America Vote Act federal funds, and then replacement with general funds for those that are central to the administration of the elections. And then a deficiency appropriation for the court, the judges' allocation of legal fees in the lawsuits related to redistricting. I'm the lucky person that gets sued in those matters. Business services, we've suggested that we will be in line with the 5% reduction, which has been kind of across the board for many agencies.
Excuse me, Mr. Secretary, yes. We have a quorum.
That 5% is about $160,000 per year. All of you are aware of the size of the cuts that have been sort of continuous for quite a few years. We are down significantly in terms of staff and overall budget. We will make up some portion of this cut by some postponement of some equipment investments. There will be some salary savings as our automation continues to come online. But the truth is we are a very service and technology-heavy agency. When we look into the future, we see that we have to stay at the highest level of customer service because all of our businesses have the option with the Internet to file in any state they choose, to use UCC and other services. So we want to make sure that we are keeping a very high level of service. And in this regard, taking that 5% cut and making sure that we're not harming our services and our making sure that we're keeping our technology as current and as protected as we can. The second is the HABA funds appropriation and replacement. That's the second change request. For the past decade, thanks to federal dollars, we've had about $1 million a year, a little more than $1 million a year, a little more than $2 million in the biennium to pay for core election services, primarily the construction of the statewide voter registration database, our statewide voter registration system, SVRS. We are now at the end of those funds. There's about $1 million left. Appropriating that $1 million to our office will cover the first year of the biennium. But from that point forward, then, in the biennium, we'll need another $1 million from general funds to maintain that system. And that's a system that all the counties and the other subunits of government that are working with the counties in terms of election administration, that's what they need. And then after this biennium, then approximately $2 million a year will be needed to be added to our base to cover those HAVA funds, which will have been spent. You can see there's a little chart there that just kind of describes how it's gone over this past decade. The third change item is the allocation by the court, by the judge, of legal fees. The judge did dramatically reduce from what was asked. It has been set at about $345,000 with some interest. We estimate it's about $355,000 now, and it's one time. It happens every 10 years, and we're just the ones who get sued under those kind of lawsuits, and so it's a change request to cover what the judge has allocated to the attorney. So those are the three items. Thank you again, Mr. Chairman, and we appreciate any questions.
So thank you for your report, Mr. Secretary. So back to a long story short, on the governor's recommendation, the governor's budget, tell me again, so you differ how?
We don't. He took our recommendations
All right. And
very graciously put it in front of you.
Okay.
So we're the same with him.
All right. Is there any questions? Yes, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Secretary of State Ritchie, the court that made the decision against you, the court?
Senator, could you speak into the mic?
Who's the court?
That's okay. Just because I couldn't hear.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Secretary of State Ritchie, was the court that made the decision against you, was that a district court that made the decision?
Mr. Secretary.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I just assume so. We can get the order from the court and bring it in to you. But this is the 10 years ago our office was sued in that one. This time around, it was the same.
Mr. Chair and members, Beth Fraser from the Office of the Secretary of State. Also in your packet, you have a description of each of the three change items. And on the third page, it gives the name of the suit, Hippert et al. Versus Ritchie. And I believe it was the district court.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? If not, Mr. Secretary, we appreciate you being here and the conciseness of your report. And, we may see you again, but we appreciate the information.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members.
Next, we have the Department of Veterans Affairs. Welcome, Commissioner. Commissioner, thank you for being here today. We've been looking forward to it. So if you'd all identify yourselves for the tape and go ahead.
Greetings. My name is Larry Shalito. I'm Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. With me is Michael Gallucci, who will give you an overview of the homes in our department, because we have two major agencies, the Veterans Homes, and then Reggie Worlds, my other deputy, who will be giving overview of the program and services that we offer to the people who are not residents of the homes throughout the state. Alicia Cowell, to my left, will give the financial overview and all the details that deal with that. So I get the honor of just giving the one over the world. And as you will see, we'll give the agency review, the budget, and then the governor's budget also. Who we are. We are a cabinet-level agency dedicated to serving the Minnesota veterans and their families. We are currently, depending on the figures you use, but the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs identifies 371,933 veterans in the state of Minnesota. And then who we are not the Department of Military Affairs. We are totally separate from them. We are a separate agency, and we have built right into our phone systems up there, we are not the federal VA, and that it caused a lot of confusion sometimes because I think a good half of the phone calls we get really have to be redirected to the medical center. As I stated earlier, I am the commissioner and Reggie Worlds with our program and services, and then as you know, 5 years ago, they merged the homes into our agency, which greatly, exponentially increased the number of people in the agency. In our next slide, we did bring, by the way, our cheering fans. So if you want to do that.
It's a good thing. Yeah.
Yes. So as we look at this, what we do, we are committed, we are your representatives to ensure that the veterans in the state of Minnesota and their families get the benefits that they have earned and are deserving. Our goal is to make sure that they get the programs, the services, the needs to ensure a quality of life. I would just point out, and I'll mention it now, but I'll also mention it again later, we are a $2.1 billion industry for the state of Minnesota. And the problem that I've experienced in this new position, now entering my third year, it is a lot of transparent dollars. These are dollars that come back in compensation, pensions, medical assistance, GI Bill, loan guarantees, and life insurance, and it's not seen. Yet those dollars, I truly believe, keep a lot of people off of public assistance rolls as they get in their later years. And we'll show you a diagram of just the population distribution. And as we look at this, we have 5 veterans' homes. 4 of those deal with skilled nursing, Minneapolis being the flagship. And then we have outstate in Laverne, Fergus Falls, and Silver Bay. And then we have one that's a primary domiciliary at Hastings. And then we have a new, in fact, the second only in the country, and Mike will give you details on that, our adult daycare center in helping people stay at home, but during the day the family can take them, drop them off, and they can be with their friends. We have 17 different programs and services, and our strong partnerships with the federal VA, our veteran service organizations, affectionately known by the legislature as the HATS, and we're very, very proud of them. I view them very seriously as my board of directors. And then we have over 120 county veteran service officers in all 87 counties in the state of Minnesota. And they are doing the heavy lifting in many ways. And then we have, of course, our private organizations and nonprofit organizations that we part with. And Deputy Worlds will be talking about those. On my next slide, as I mentioned earlier, we have the 372,000 veterans. It represents about 7% of our population. They're serving all 87 counties. And what I want you to look at is this slide. You are seeing, and there's a lot of, I mean, all the focus in the last 10 years, 12 years, has been on OIF, OEF. Minnesota has been outstanding in making sure that these troops are properly sent off, and then they are welcomed back home. But as you look at that, the single biggest bubble that we have is in an era, and when we lump both Gulf War I and OIF-OEF, is the Vietnam era. I'm a Vietnam vet. Guess what? I'm eligible for Social Security. So what I'm getting at is this generation is coming. We have had them, and they have quietly worked through for many years. What is interesting and what we have found is one of the enemies of a veteran is a concept we all work for. It's called retirement. They have time on their hands. So one of the biggest things that we are seeing is we start programs for counseling, for example, with the new returning veterans, only to find out that some of the biggest end users are the Vietnam and Korea era as they've gone into retirement. So we'll be talking more about that. So I'm just saying it's not just one era. Then, what we're at the next page, before I turn it over, is the things that have changed in the past. Our veterans population has decreased 15%. However, our compensation benefits recipients have increased 91%. We have an increase in pension recipients of 18%, or a decrease. Our educational benefits have 144% increase. And I would point out, and I'm very, very pleased, and I don't know if there's any Minskew representatives here, but the state of Minnesota has stepped forward in both public and private institutions. We have a number of veteran centers on campus. And putting my old Minskew hat back on, this is helping a lot of our veterans as they come back. The campuses have set aside rooms for them so that they can meet and talk to other veterans. Strange as it seems, a 23-year-old veteran cannot relate to an 18-year-old high school grad. They have just seen too many different experiences, and therefore peer-to-peer becomes extremely important. And we've seen a 39% decrease in insurance, but a 10% increase in loan guarantee. And our increases in claim representation, our power of attorney, if you will, to those veterans has increased over 60%. And as I said earlier, in the VA, the last two years of data, in 2010, end of year, Minnesota brought back the 1.8, in 2011, 2.1, a $300 million increase in the benefits. And as we say to everybody, and I'll close before I turn it over to Representative Worlds, or Representative Worlds, I promoted you, I apologize. Deputy Worlds.
Deputy House. Okay.
I even caught where I'm going, so I'm not even going to worry about it anymore. All I'm saying is we are a growth industry, and I would stress one more time that our business is just beginning as we bring them back home, all the way home. Representative Worlds.
So Commissioner, what you're telling us is that the Vietnam veterans, the guys who fought that war, are the baby boomers right now, and they're just about to retire officially,
yes.
And that's as with the rest of the rest of the nation who aren't veterans. That's something that we've got to overcome right now in terms of a lot of different things happening.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, what you'll start seeing. I just came back from a national conference, and if you go back 50 years, it's 1963. That is the first year of the Vietnam War. And what you're going to see in the state of Minnesota as well as across the nation for the next 10 years, the welcome home of the Vietnam veterans as they work their way through. It'll start out slow and steadily build up, oftentimes 1968, Tet Offensive, if you will, is kind of a climax year, and then going back down. But the war wasn't over until May 30th, 1975.
Right.
So there's a lot of veterans that have gone through that era.
Thank you. Deputy Worlds. Deputy DeLucci, are you first?
I think I am.
Okay, well, that's good.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
You're going to identify yourself again, aren't you? Okay.
My name is Michael Colucci. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Veterans Affairs Healthcare. And I'm excited to be here. It's my first time, so be gentle with me. I'll try to be gentle with you.
I'm sure we're going to get along fine, Mike.
Thank you, sir. Here is what we do. I'm not going to insult you. I'll allow you to read the slides. But basically, we provide and deliver health care to a number of a variety of diagnoses in all the homes. As the commissioner has spoken to, we do have four skilled nursing facilities and then a very large domiciliary in Hastings. We also have in Minneapolis, we have a much smaller domiciliary as well as, very proud to say, only the second adult day center that's been recognized and certified by the VA. So.
And Mr. Gallucci, are you going to tell us a little bit about that? Because that's
about the adult daycare?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. The adult daycare center provides an opportunity for folks who have not quite met the needs to come all the way into a skilled nursing facility. Gives them an opportunity to have their caretaker bring them to us, and for a reasonable fee allows us to take care of them during the daytime, and then they pick them up on the way home from work. We're looking to work with some of our veteran service organizations like DAV to help broaden the service area of transport so that we could help more. And we're looking to partner with the federal VA, who also has an adult day center there in Minneapolis that is looking to see if perhaps we might be able to consolidate our efforts on our campus.
Sounds good.
Okay. This next slide is a slide that basically wanted to provide you with some demographics. The circles currently show what the standard is, which is the 60-mile, 100-minute radius, if you will, around locations and the existing homes. That's really important because we wanted to be sure that we provided a graphic for both houses and the communities, as there, as you know, appears to be quite an interest in more veterans' homes across the state. But what I want you to take away from here is the diversity that you're seeing there. The domiciliary care is primarily, as the commissioner pointed out, Vietnam veterans right now. We're starting to see some younger folks, but most of them are Vietnam veterans in an average age of 58 years old. And I think that the relative issue here with ages that I would like to point out to the committee is that they're getting older. And when you look back at what we assume is coming in regards to the new era vet as well as supporting the current veterans that we have, the length of stay is going to be much longer and much more intense. Our new vets logically could be with us if they were to enter into the domiciliary at a young age, 60 years as they go through the system. Next slide.
Senator Anderson.
I'm sorry.
Excuse me, Mike. Sir.
Thank you.
Deputy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regarding this slide here that you, the one talking about the residence characteristics, it shows your male average age for skilled nursing care of 78, so forth and so on. I'm just wondering, because I know that during Vietnam, as I'm a Vietnam vet, and as I served in the Air National Guard and the Air Force Reserve, there are more and more women and minorities that were coming in. Where in the system is there a reference to females going into the homes and being a part, or minorities being a part of this? And I don't see any breakout on your chart here as far as that being recognized, recognition for those people serving as veterans also.
Deputy Gallucci.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, thank you for your question. We recognized when I came on board that was an issue of understanding that demographics. I will freely admit to you that women's programs are a concern for me. both in a domiciliary and a skilled nursing. We have been working since I came on board with, to be able to provide a real overview. If you'll notice, well, probably better that you look at your paper. You'll notice that there are numbers already, and what we're doing is trying to calibrate the veterans and that breakdown within not only the counties but also then again within the homes so that we could design programs a little bit more efficiency. As we're building 17 North, which is the new facility in Minneapolis, those programs actually are in the forefront for the seniors. And actually, in addition, in Hastings, in the domiciliaries, we're currently in the middle of a revamp of those programs to focus more on not just the younger generation, but women's programs and women's health issues in particular. So I don't have a solid answer. I acknowledge that that is a shortcoming that we are trying to address as we put together the pieces to new programs in delivering a different type of, I don't want to say a different type of health care, but a more cutting-edge health care system.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So could you provide me with some documentation of your work in that area as far as you're making some get-together with different groups and your path of and a direction of goals and set things of how you're working towards bringing the women's veterans in place and also minorities and giving me some kind of a picture of your future and what your timeline is as far as coming forward with a recommendation to us?
Deputy Gallucci.
I'm trying to remember the protocols here.
Yeah,
thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
You're doing well. It's the chairman that's screwing up here.
Senator Day, I can provide that. I can't provide it right this second to you. I can tell you I have it. I have the concept, and I know where that project needs to go. Part of my problem, quite frankly, is being able to have the money to be able to do that. And so, as you're going to see, as we present, is new programs, different types of programs, and programs that are geared towards a multi-generational group requires us to be thinking, How do we do that and still be able to work within the budget that is provided?
Senator
Mr. Anderson. Chair, well, my concern is that we've had women involved with the military since World War II, and if we keep putting this off and keep saying we're going to do this, it'll never get done. We can talk about it, but if we don't get something in black and white and we don't have some goals set, we don't have some future plans or a map, a roadmap of where we're going, how we're going to get to. I mean, I don't know how long we're going to put this off, but I surely would like to see something, and by, at least by the end of session, if you could get something to me at least or to the chair, that'd be appreciated.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Senator Anderson, I will do more than that. I'm a 35-year veteran. I just retired and took this job over 1 year ago. I can tell you that dealing with women, dealing with the issues of minorities, dealing with those things that are necessary to help them recover and move on in their lives, that's what I did before I came here to Minnesota. And I came here to Minnesota to take this job for just this purpose. So I'm not waiting till the end of the session. We're working on this. My staff has been working on this as we move through this first year, trying to understand Minnesota's process and also to understand where we are within the homes. I think I have a pretty good grasp on that, and our goal right now is to implement real programs to solve real problems for our veterans.
Look forward to it.
Thank you,
Senator,
sir.
Thanks, Senator Anderson. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just looking at that map and the circles up there, Mr. Chairman, it looks like that there's a big area up in northwest and north central Minnesota that doesn't have one of those circles. And I'm, you know, as the chair of the Capital Investment Committee, We're getting a number of different proposals coming in from all over the state. Does the department have any plans or recommendations as to how to fill that hole up there?
Deputy Gallucci.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, absolutely do. We have a I have a plan that I've presented to the commissioner to discuss in regards to how we should go about doing this. I am more than familiar with not just a few, but my last count was 7 communities that have asked me for consideration for a home. And Commissioner, with your permission to speak frankly.
Would you want me to do it?
I'll do it, sir.
All right.
We've placed before you, we have submitted a bill, an application, and we've indicated to the governor that we're going to be asking for $54 million bonding to complete Minneapolis. The reason that the Minneapolis campus is costing $54 million, quite frankly, is because those that came before me didn't really sit down and give you all the crunch numbers that are needed that go with that to include capital investment inflation that's 4 years from the day that you build, which was a significant amount of money. We estimate that the $54 million will provide us the ability to complete the home in Minneapolis, which is a critical final stage to making the Minneapolis campus a working and collaborative campus. Without going into much more detail at this time, which I can, but I'm sure you don't want it right now, we have also forwarded our application to the VA for the capital construction grant program, and are anticipating that we will be in priority one if and when the legislature gives us the money. Grant you, all of you know that that's a 65-35 split. But there's no guarantee in Washington right now that I'm going to be able to compete and receive that money. So I'm going to ask you for $54 million. And then we're going to ask you to give us the opportunity to keep the remainder of whatever money we might retrieve back from the federal government and be able to then pass that money back to one of these other areas that the legislature deems proper for us to build, and then submit another application or move another application forward within the VA process, so that we're going to use that money over and over again and squeeze it for everything it can so that I can build as many homes as this body will allow me to.
Answer
thank
your
you.
Question?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Along that same question, you get past Minneapolis, and I would rather not have it what we deem appropriate, but where you all think it would be best placed. I would rather not be a political football where we're all trying to lobby for our little spot when there may be better locations than our little spot. And so, you know, whether that's Bemidji or wherever it is. And so I would hope that you would give us guidance along those lines as well so that veterans are best served.
Well said, Senator.
Chairman.
Senator Metzen, Senator Metzen.
I've heard there's a tremendous waiting list at Minneapolis, and there's a huge need out there to additional beds there. Is that what you're talking about, the $54 million or part of it?
Deputy Gallucci.
In the last couple of weeks, many people have come up to me and said, Senator, you know, we can't get in. We have to correct that.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Senator, thank you for your question. There is a huge waiting list. In the state of Minnesota currently, we have approximately 872 veterans who have are on waiting lists in all of my locations. In Minneapolis alone, 474. The completion of building what would be Building 17 South, the third phase, would be an additional 100 beds for a total of 441 beds, including the domiciliary, on the campus in Minneapolis. While that doesn't solve the problems, the fact of the matter is you would have to build 9 homes across this state to take care of the current standing list that I have. And I would assure you that once you did that, there'll be another 900 probably standing behind me. We are trying to address the issue, and going then back to Senator
Kasauka's
question. Thank you, sir. We understand that the power to build a home comes from the legislature, and we appreciate the fact that as the subject matter experts of health care and programs and services, that we would be included or asked the question. If you're asking my personal opinion, sir?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. My personal opinion is that we owe it to the outer homes. We've been in the metro areas for a long time, and I do believe that there is opportunities to be considered first in the outer homes and moving back. So if you were going to ask me where I thought I would go, I would tell you that I think that there is a need in the Northwest, in northern Minnesota, to be able to address the issues and the needs up there. I realize that that's not the largest number of veterans, but it's not about the largest number of veterans all the time. It's about delivering a proximity opportunity for veterans everywhere in the state of Minnesota to receive this type of health care. And I think that we move out and move in, and I believe that it's important to do that, to have a real master plan instead of every legislative session, wait for everybody to line up and tell you where they would like to go, as opposed to a real plan that says, as the legislature is able to find money, this is where we're going in order to take care of veterans.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Senator Metzen.
Well, I think it's imperative that we find money and find it soon. I mean, we've got our WW2 veterans are dying off. I don't know what the number is today, 2,000 a day or something, or I've heard, or 1,500 to 2,000. You've got your Korean vets that are at that age. You've got your Vietnam vets that are catching up there at 65 to 70. And this is an area where we as a state ought to provide this housing sooner than later. So I'm on board to help all I can, and I know Senator Stump, who chairs the committee, is going to look hard at this. He's told me that, so we got to get it done. I mean, we can't afford to wait 2, 3, 4, or 5 years to do some of these things.
We can.
Because then 5,000 more people die off.
That's not the answer. We got to do it now. We got to do it soon.
Okay, Deputy Gallucci, go ahead with the rest of your presentation, would you please?
Our next slide here is currently what we provide. I think the thing that I wanted you to take away from here on this busy slide is a multi-faceted continuum of care on the Minneapolis campus. That is one of the things that we believe is really necessary from primary care capabilities to domiciliary, adult day center, into long-term care. And in the Hastings area, like I spoke of earlier, upgrading our behavioral health services so that we're actually looking at vital ways that we not only are going to be able to deliver good mental health care, but we're also transitioning people that can transition back into the community. That requires a bold step, which my staff is doing, and that is revamping the programs to be able to present not only opportunities to rehab and learn new job skills within the organizations like the Woodshop, but we recently have been talking to Minute about repurposing of computers, and we are looking to work with corporate Minnesota to come and put real training programs on the campus in Hastings that will provide job skills and then job opportunities for those veterans as they break through their care plan and are prepared to go back into the real into civilian world. Next slide, please. Again, these are just some of our current things. I think in this here tell you that we're looking continuously at figuring out different ways to deliver reductions in Laverne as well as in a number of our other homes. Some real steps have been made in reducing health care, raising, as you'll see in another slide or so, the level of care of these veterans above the national average. Currently, this is goes to the senator's comment earlier. Our capacity and our wait lists. Some of our operational beds are below what we're licensed for. That primary reason is because, frankly, we're struggling in recruiting and we're working through with the University of Minnesota and some of the other organizations in our catchment areas of our homes to be able to bring on staff. So it's very important to me that I'm not bringing in people and filling beds unless I'm able to provide quality care with the right format of staffing. Some of the questions, I thought this was a very important slide for you. Some questions have been raised as to why veterans' homes are even important. Why don't we just let them go to the community? And I will say to you that in your wisdom, the legislature has, through statute and rules, defined the level of care that we provide. And that level of care is in sometimes well above what the community, not that the community provides a flawed care, but we do many other things. One of the highlights that I like to point out is transportation. We transport our residents and our veterans to their appointments, and we don't charge them for that. That in and of itself is an expense. The other piece that's very important is residents have a great asset distribution capability, and that is that they have a one-day look back to coming into the home, which really protects the veterans' families and their estate, as opposed to in the civilian world, you come in and they have you apply for Medicaid, and you do a five-year look back and endangers the estates for our veterans. And I think the other thing that's important here is, of course, if you come to the veterans' homes in the state of Minnesota, you come to a place where the VA provides a per diem in your cost of care, as opposed to an out-and-out cost from the family, either as a result of out-of-pocket costs or just insurance costs.
Never.
Next slide, please. As I pointed to earlier, this is not the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs healthcare system of old. Over the years, this staff has worked hard to come back and provide great health care, cutting-edge health care. We have received, this year alone, over 49 best-in-class accommodations across all of the homes. These are just a few of the areas. And when I say best-in-class, the pinnacles that do the national survey for us has found that we are not just above the average of the industry, but above the national average overall.
Did we take care of this one?
Yeah. Additionally, we've had two homes, Fergus Falls and Minneapolis, that have been recognized and have received national recognition for their designs and implementation of their home as far as design is concerned. As I've stated, the adult daycare is only the second in the country that is certified by the VA. Minneapolis has had five projects before this year's Governor's Continuous Improvement Award, and Minneapolis actually received that prestigious award. And currently, we're working and collaborating with the federal VA to explore telemedicine and e-health, as well as exploring the possibility of electronic health records, which we believe will enhance and put us on the cutting edge, because there are no other state veteran homes in this nation currently that are sharing records with their respective VA. And we intend to be the first to do that, because we believe that that provides a much more continuous care plan for our veterans. Are there any questions, Mr. Chairman?
Any questions of the committee?
I got those decals. I thank you much for the opportunity.
You did a very good job, Devin.
Thank you, sir. Reggie World, Deputy Commissioner.
Deputy World.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Reggie Worrells. I'm Deputy Commissioner of Programs and Services for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
Get those anyway.
What we do. The purpose of the Programs and Services Division is to fill voids that exist in the Veterans Services community and to provide veteran-focused services to Minnesota veterans, their dependents, and survivors. If you take a look at the current slide, this outlines the 17 different programs that are offered through our division. I would like to take an opportunity to highlight the four most utilized services that we have in the division. And if you have any questions on any of the additional services, then I would be more than happy to answer those questions.
Thank you, Deputy.
Our federal claims offices provide advocacy and assistance for veterans and family members by acting as their advocate directly to the federal VA for compensation and pension benefits. Compensation, VA compensation, is a disability payment for a disease or an injury or a condition that was incurred while on active duty. A pension benefit is a monetary benefit that is paid to a veteran who served during a wartime period, but the injuries or the disability might not necessarily be service-related.
I yield to the great guy from the Falls.
As noted in one of our previous slides, our offices have experienced a substantial increase in their number of claims for both pension and compensation, and a 169% increase in the number of walk-in traffic coming into our offices. The next program I would like to highlight is our State Soldiers Assistance Program. This is an emergency program provided by state dollars. This program provides direct emergency financial assistance to veterans, their dependents, and survivors. This program makes provisions for shelter and utility payments, optical and dental benefits, and cash grants for food and personal needs. Eligibility factors will include the disability status, the financial need, and sustainability. The next program I will highlight is our Higher Education Veterans Program. This program assists veterans and eligible family members to navigate the complicated VA education benefit system. It also staffs our campus veteran assistant offices to work with colleges to enhance or develop veteran-friendly policies and procedures, such as payment deferments while awaiting educational benefits, military transfer credits, registration flexibility due to deployments or referrals to appropriate service providers such as MACV or our homeless program or our county veteran service officers. When needed, these staff members also facilitate communications between departments at the college. We have 13 agency staff dispersed across the state in 6 established regions and provide assistance on 64 campuses. Data received from the federal VA shows there are currently 14,430 veterans and dependents attending colleges in the state. And our staff from this program served over 5,505 new individuals through this program.
So, Deputy, you said 63 colleges and universities. That must be pretty close to all of them, isn't it?
It's pretty close for Minsk, sir.
Yeah. Good enough. Thanks.
You're welcome, sir. Last highly used program that I'll speak to before your questions is our cemetery. Our cemetery was located in Little Falls, Minnesota. It is a complement to the National Cemetery Administration to provide veteran burials in areas underserved by national cemeteries. In the National Cemetery Administration provides support to state cemeteries in the form of grants that can be used for development, expansion, or improvement. This past summer, the administration provided a $1.4 million grant to the Little Falls Cemetery for expansion at our current facility in Little Falls for an additional 1,200 burial plots. During the last fiscal year, ending on June 30th, our cemetery provided 423 burials and is now the final resting place for over 4,500 veterans and their eligible family members. We have very high customer satisfaction. 100% of family members report to be satisfied or extremely satisfied with the services provided at the cemetery. In 2011, the Little Falls Cemetery was recognized by the National Cemetery Association as the for an Excellence of Appearance Award, which basically means that it has reached shrine status, and we're one of only 4 states in the nation that has ever received this award. I would like to leave you with a final thought before I take any questions about any additional services that we have. We partner very, very heavily, as the commissioner said, with our county veteran service officers, with our veteran service organizations, with a lot of nonprofits and our federal VA. And it is our goal, our desire to continue to increase those partnerships to make sure that all of the entitlements, our veterans are made aware of the entitlements that they have coming to them in order to improve their life as much as possible.
Thank you, Deputy Worlds. Any questions? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Worlds, you mentioned on your slide presentation women's veterans programs, but I don't see it in the budget here. Is it combined with some other bullet statement here for women's veterans programs?
Deputy Worlds.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, we have Barbara O'Reilly. She is our director of Women Veterans Program and Veterans Employment. She wears a dual hat. She works collaboratively with a lot of the women veterans groups in the state, some nonprofit. She works very closely with the federal VA, both at the regional office and the VA hospitals, coordinating services with the women veterans clinics at both St. Cloud, Minneapolis, Fargo, Sioux Falls. So she coordinates all of our efforts with regards to addressing the needs of women veterans. We meet with her on a regular basis, providing us updates. And then, of course, with our direct partnerships with the VA, we address those issues as they come forward.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
So, Mr. Wolz, could you tell me where on the spreadsheet here they would be included as far as dollars for the Women's Veterans Program?
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, Alicia Cowell, Finance Director for the Department of Veterans Affairs. You will find
Skulls.
The Women Veterans Program, the budget is within the Veterans Services budget activity. I have a slide coming up in the financial overview that will show exactly
okay.
where that
Thank you.
Is
Thank
within
you.
Our budget.
Any other questions? Senator Metz.
Do we still help the grave markers at the cemeteries? We used to throw in like $50,000 a year to put these. Was it the bronze grave markers? Do we still do that? We did it when I chaired the Veterans Committee, but I don't see it on your slide. So,
Deputy Worlds.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzen, yes, sir. We do continue to provide that program, and we take that from inside of our funds on the inside of the department.
Okay, thank you. I didn't see it singled out, but that's good that you do that. Your department does it.
Okay, other questions? All right, so now we're going to the financial portion, the financial overview, and we have Financial Director Alicia Cowell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, again, I'm Alicia Cowell, Finance Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and I'm going to be providing a financial overview of the resources that we use to provide the services that my colleagues have described. Right, a multitask. our base budget for fiscal years 14 and 15.
Excuse me, Ms. Cosby, before you start, so you're going to give us an overview of the budget, and are you going to tell us how that relates to the governor's recommendations, too?
Yes, Mr. Terry, I apologize. I'll provide an overview of the budget as well as the governor's budget proposals.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Our budget is $234 million. That is all funds for the fiscal years 14 and 15. And about 52% of this budget is made up of general fund dollars. As you can see on the slide, about $117.5 million is direct general fund appropriation. Breaking that down further, about 89.9% is an appropriation for the veterans' homes. $27.5 million is for programs and services. And then we also have $3.7 million that is a forecasted open appropriation for the Minnesota GI Bill. And that is both the education benefits and the on-the-job training apprenticeship program. These resources allow us to employ about 1,100 FTEs. Kind of dissecting that $234 million through three different lenses here, the first pie chart shows expenditures by fund. And as you can see, that 52% that I mentioned being our general fund appropriation, where we actually expend most of it is in the special revenue fund. So the homes appropriation of $89.9 million, we have legal authority to transfer that to the special revenue fund, and that's where the expenditures actually occur. So that's why you're seeing the 73% as the green in the special revenue fund. Beyond that, we have 11% that is federal funds. Mostly federal construction grants. The remaining percent of our budget is made up of resident trust. We hold resident trust accounts for veterans in the homes. It acts as a bank account for veterans if they choose for us to provide that to them. Gifts and donations, and then, again, that open appropriation for the Minnesota GI Bill. The second pie chart is just showing the breakdown of the programs and services program that Deputy Commissioner Worlds described, which makes up 18% of our budget versus the 82%, which is the homes budget. And further, our expenditures by category, as I said, the compensation costs and payroll associated with the 1,100 FTEs makes up the vast majority of our budget. Beyond that, we have other operating expenses, contracts, supplies, equipment, that kind of thing, as well as grants that we provide and our state soldiers assistance program payments would be in that category as well. And then finally, capital outlay is about 8% of the budget, building improvements, federal grants, that kind of thing. So kind of taking a closer look at how the expenditures by fund are broken out by program is what we have on this next slide. So again, the $234 million is our base budget for fiscal year 14-15. If you look at the middle section, you'll see that the programs and services is primarily funded by the general fund, about 66%. About 8% or 9% is the Minnesota GI Bill open appropriation. And then about 22% is federal funding. And this is, as Deputy Commissioner Worlds expressed, we received two federal grants for constructing cemeteries, for expanding the Little Falls Cemetery, as well as constructing a new cemetery in southeastern Minnesota. So that's why it's a little bigger than it would be in other fiscal years. And then a small gifts and donations. Looking at the veterans homes, as I described, you know, we do transfer the $89.9 million into the miscellaneous special revenue. And there it is commingled with VA per diem that we receive from the VA for residents' cost of care, as well as maintenance charges that we charge to residents based on their ability to pay, along with Medicare reimbursements. Medicare Part D reimbursements for the central pharmacy that we operate. So kind of breaking that down, that $170.1 million that you see in this miscellaneous special revenue is about 55% general fund, 25% VA per diem, and then about 20% maintenance charge and Medicare Part D reimbursements. And then taking a further look, I hope this can answer some of your questions, Senator Anderson, about where some of the programs that Deputy Commissioner Worlds described and how they fall into our budget. Again, the open appropriation is on the top for the Minnesota GI Bill at $3.7 million. And then our Veterans Services budget activity consists of administration, strategic planning, IT, veterans preference, the Bronze Star markers, and women veterans and employment initiatives. And then, and that is about $6 million for the biennium. The benefits and services budget activity, which is just under $25 million, is the largest portion of the programs and services budget. And that the biggest piece is the State Soldiers Assistance Program, as well as some Minnesota Corps program payments, the state cemeteries, and the state approving agency, which is a federally funded program. And then finally, claims and outreach at about $8 million for the biennium for our claims and outreach office, tribal veteran service offices, the higher education assistance program, CVSOs, MACV, and our support our troops is also, our support our troops account is also.
So Ms. Call, that's, I see it's, that's, you didn't mention, but it's a women veterans program is included in there too.
Yes, under the Veterans Services budget activity.
Oh, it says under claims and outreach. That's where I saw it.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's listed twice. It should be on under Veterans Services.
Oh, okay.
I apologize.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Call, what percentage then? I see you got it broken down as 14% of the budget, of the program budget is Veterans Services. What percent of those services that are for our women veterans, if you could break that out?
Senator Anderson, it's relatively small. As Deputy Commissioner Worlds alluded to, it's really just the salary associated with the director of that program and some other incidental costs.
So, Mr. Chair,
yes,
Ms. Calls, what programs do the women veterans have as far as, you know, items that they that she does for women veterans?
Ms. Call.
If I could invite Barb Riley up to the table, she could describe what program specifically she's involved with.
Thank you.
Ms. Riley.
It's Barb O'Reilly. And,
Barb O'Reilly.
Mr. Chair, I didn't get the rules briefing, so I hope I do this right.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, basically, I have partnered with a lot of different organizations, a lot of not-for-profit organizations to provide outreach to women veterans. This has included things like the League of Catholic Women for Minneapolis League of Catholic Women, an organization called A Place of Grace, Tee It Up for the Troops, really partnering with those other existing organizations to develop programs that support women veterans. We have a four-part series that we've done for the past year and a half that has provided resources to women veterans. I've also partnered with the Veterans Administration to do a boot camp for veterans. Additionally, partnering with the Women Veterans Initiative groups to, again, look at the existing resources to provide programs and outreach to women veterans.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
I'm kind of persistent about this because I have a daughter that's got 16 and a half years in the Air Force, active duty, and she doesn't want to come back to Minnesota. And so I'm just concerned about what's going on with women veterans and how we're making an outreach or doing outreach for those women who are serving honorably, and yet she wants to go back to a state that doesn't have the tax burden that we have here in the state. So I just, if there's something that can entice her to bring her back, I'd love to. I mean, she's still got 3.5 years left to go in her active duty, but I'm curious as to what we can do for women veterans, minorities, and other people that help them feel welcome back here in the state of Minnesota.
Ms. O'Reilly.
Mr. Chair, Senator, what can we do? What are we doing? I think we can certainly do more. This is a relatively new program, a relatively new target of underserved veterans that we're looking at. So initially, I've looked to partner with existing organizations, and then we'll identify what more we can do. We're looking at developing some means to communicate with women veterans so we can understand what the needs are. There are several women veteran organizations throughout the state, but most of the women veterans organizations are largely World War II veterans, Vietnam-era veterans, and we don't have so many organizations for the younger veterans. So, yes, I think we can do more. Is there something in any state that is going to entice a woman veteran to come back to that state? I don't know. I think that we have to look at all of the programs that support veterans and ensure that we do have the programs that support that target audience. The Minneapolis Veterans Administration Hospital is one of the best in the nation in terms of women's health care. So I think we are doing some very good things in Minnesota to make it inviting or favorable for veterans and women veterans to come back.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Anderson. Thank you, Ms. O'Reilly. Ms. Call, you want to continue?
All right. So if there are no other questions with this slide, I will move on to the next one. And finally, here we have detail on the expenditures by home for the base budget for fiscal years 14 and 15. So what's included here in each of these budget activities or each of the homes is the operating budget for each home, repair and betterment accounts, our central pharmacy, and then IT initiatives, as well as the resident trust accounts that I mentioned before. So as you can see here, $191.9 million for the biennium, the largest being obviously Minneapolis, which makes up about 54% of the program budget and close to 44% of the agency's budget, and employs about 976 FTEs. So if there are no other questions just on the financial overview, I'll walk us through the governor's budget proposals for MDVA. And if you have questions of any of them, we do have the subject matter experts here who can answer those questions. So our first initiative is a $5 million appropriation in fiscal year 14 and 15 to improve IT services. MDVA has some serious deficiencies in its IT infrastructure and critical service support. This proposal would provide ongoing funding to really raise up our IT services to industry standards for CMS and HIPAA compliance. The intended result here being that we would mitigate the risk of a major infrastructure failure, network intrusion, any of which could cause some serious life safety incidences within the agency.
The second proposal is $425,000 in fiscal year 15 be added to the base to operate a new veteran cemetery in Fillmore County. In 2009, the legislature appropriated a bonding bill in which it authorized MDVA to build three new veteran cemeteries across the state. We did not need to use the bonded dollars for purchasing land. We were lucky to have Fillmore County donate land to us for constructing a new cemetery. And on top of that, we received a federal grant to design and construct the cemetery. So this proposal is for a general fund appropriation to maintain the cemetery and get it up and running. And once it is running, we will be able to get federal reimbursements for veteran burials, and we will also charge fees for eligible dependents and spouses who are buried at the cemetery as well. And again, the intended result being that all veterans will receive the dignified burial that they have earned. The next change item here is not a new proposal. It's requesting $200,000 each year for compensation for honor guards at the funerals of veterans. The past 2 years, we've been provided one-time appropriations for this program, and which provides $50 stipends to veteran service organizations that provide honors at the funerals of veterans. So this proposal would add $200,000 again to our base, again with the anticipated result of providing dignified veterans to burials.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does this include, like, the American flag that is given to the spouse usually?
Ms. Call? Deputy World.
Mr. Chair, no, sir, that does not include the flag that would come. This is just strictly for the honors that is provided by the service organization to come out and present the flag and, of course, provide the service of firing the rifles and providing a bugler.
Thank you.
Ms. Collins.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. The next proposal, moving on, is the Minnesota GI Bill expansion. Again, this is expanding on a proposal that was started last year. So it would expand the Minnesota GI Bill to include all generations of veterans. So all generations of veterans would be eligible to receive both education benefits as well as on-the-job training apprenticeship benefits. On top of that, it would also provide a direct appropriation of $100,000 to administer the OJT apprenticeship program. And the intent here is just to ensure that all generations of veterans have the skills and the education needed to get good jobs in today's competitive job market.
And Ms. Calls, who is there some part of the generational, do we have a generational gap somewhere that isn't getting these services? Deputy World?
Yes, sir. The program as it currently stands really only serves post 9/11 veterans. Okay. However, as we take a look at the entire landscape of veterans, we're looking at there are some older or some younger Vietnam veterans that are experiencing displacement from jobs. We're looking at folks from Desert Storm that are experiencing displacement from jobs, and they don't have the federal educational benefits available to them that this current generation does.
Okay.
So by expanding this to all generations, anybody that is currently, you know, within the parameters of the program or the age group of the program will have those opportunities to go back and get the additional skills training in order to become competitive in the job market.
Thank you. Ms. Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Moving on, our next change item is for a $500,000 appropriation added to the base to provide grants for both operational and programmatic needs to the county veteran service officers. Right now, we do provide grants to the county veteran service officers. However, they are for just basic office needs, copiers, that kind of thing. This would expand the statutory language for the grant program to include those programmatic needs so county veteran service offices could provide, for example, transportation for veterans to get to their medical appointments, outreach activities for issues such as homelessness, and that kind of thing. So this program would provide a base grant amount of $500,000 to each county, and then they would receive an additional amount based on the county veteran population on top of that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
Just clarification on that. Do they currently get, what's the amount they currently get in this program?
Mr. Chair, Senator, the current amount, it operates on a three-year rotating basis. So this program, the new proposal would allow every county to be eligible for the grants every year. So as it works now, counties are eligible for the grant every three years. They receive a base amount of $7,500. And I might have to stop because I could be giving you inaccurate information.
Deputy Worlds, did you have something you wanted to add on that?
Yes, sir. Currently, as our financial director spoke to, we provide $95,000 to a third of the counties on a rotating basis every 3 years. So this grant would then allow us to provide a much more substantial grant to achieve some of the outcomes that we're looking to achieve with regards to transportation, heightening awareness, partnering, advertising their offices, and making some enhancements on a more permanent basis.
Thank you. All right. Senator Ames.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Worlds, did I hear that right? The counties are currently getting $95,000 every third year?
Every third year. It's broken down into the thirds. There's 87 counties, so a percentage of the counties every third year would be eligible for a grant. It's a formula that we use based on veteran population as to the amount that they would receive, but that's currently what it is.
Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Senator Dean.
And the request here is to go to $500,000 per year per county?
No, sir. It would be a base amount of $5,000 a year for each county.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
Yeah, to get one. Senator Chairman.
So I think I'm reading the same thing. CDESO in this budget piece here, and it says that I'm reading it, that's right, $200,000, $750,000 per year to MDVA's base budget through 11. So 2011, up to 2011, he had $750,000 per year. And then after that, the last year it was $200,000. Now you want to go back up to $500,000. Is that correct? Am I reading this right?
Ms. Call.
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, that's correct. So previously there was a CVSO enhancement grant program that had the same goal of providing enhancement grants to the county veteran service offices. That sunsetted in 2011. Since then, we've been providing about $95,000 total for the program. This proposal increases the total amount that would be available for the grant program to $595,000. So every year, each county will, under this change item, be eligible for the grants, and it would be a base of $5,000 plus an additional amount based on their county veteran population.
Mr. Chair, I'm almost there. So this would be this would go to the enhancement grant program. Is that correct, or is this something separate from that?
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair.
Worlds.
Mr. Chair, Senator, what this would be a combination of our current grant and also the enhancement grant, because there were two different grants before. Okay. There was an operational grant that is the every third year grant, yep. And then there was an enhancement grant that was provided that was open and competitive for CVSOs for what were the fiscal years again? I'm sorry.
It was through 2011.
Through 2011. So what we're seeking to do is to combine these two grants and provide one grant to the CVSOs every year.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Call.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our next change item is the Gold Star Families Program. This would provide $100,000 each year to plan and execute the Gold Star Program, which is an annual retreat that supports families who have lost service members in active duty. This program has received really great participation rates and satisfaction rates. And associated with this would be not only putting on the annual event, but the time of a half an FTE to administer and execute the program. The next change item, there are actually two that we have on this slide. There are two opportunities here that we see to generate new revenue, one through a veterans lottery ticket, and then a second through creating five new Support Our Veterans license plates. The revenue from these two sources would be deposited into a new veterans Support Our Veterans account that operates similar to the Support Our Troops account. However, these funds would be used to administer a grant program that would provide grants to community veterans organizations, grassroots veteran organizations that are working on responding to emerging needs in the veteran community. So, again, two different sources of revenue that we are looking at here that would be combined for the same purpose. All right, moving on, we have a next change item that's pretty simple and straightforward. Here we're looking to cancel to the general fund a $110,000 remaining amount from a one-time appropriation. In 2009, the legislature appropriated $200,000 to MDVA to enter into a grant contract with the Minnesota Ambulance Association to administer a military-to-medic program. This program, for various reasons, never came to fruition, mostly due to the availability of federal benefits for the same purpose. And so $90,000 was spent through the contract. The contract expired on June 30th, 2011, and now we're just proposing to cancel that one-time amount to the general fund. And finally, the last change item has no fiscal impact, but it is language to be included that proposes that MDVA really seek all opportunities to get reimbursed Medicare reimbursement for eligible expenses. If sufficient reimbursement is received, there is the opportunity to reduce the general fund appropriation the homes receive by the amount received from federal reimbursements. However, there is the opportunity, of course, to ensure that the homes continue to provide the highest level of care to veterans residing in the homes. And then finally, I just to wrap it up here, wanted to show a breakdown of our current biennium. This is just general fund spending compared to our fiscal year 14-15 base. And then again, comparing it to the governor's recommendation and what that looks like. Here in this chart, you'll see we just have the direct appropriations for these initiatives and the one-time $110,000 Minnesota Ambulance Association grant cancellation is not included because of its one-time nature.
So how would you summarize the governor's recommendations and...
Yes, absolutely. The governor's recommendations are bringing in some needed IT improvements to the agency, as well as expanding on some needed program expansion areas, as I said, for the Minnesota GI Bill, as well as continuing some good initiatives that are already in place, such as the Gold Star program and continuing on with our cemetery. It is ranked, I think, number one or number two in the nation by the National Cemetery Association. And so this would be expanding it to veterans that are residing in the southern part of Minnesota. So really it's a change of about $7 million between the current the base amount for 14-15 and okay. What the governor is recommending.
Okay, good. Questions on that? Senator Anderson.
Are we done with this final
Are we wrapping up here or what?
I was going to, if there aren't any questions with us, I was going to turn it over to the commissioner to wrap up the presentation.
Well, the only question I had is regarding CVSOs. Is there any way that we track from the Department of Military Affairs how the funds that are given to the counties, how they're used, are they always saying we're not getting enough? I mean, are we running out of money for these counties, or is there a tracking system that you do from Military Affairs to see how monies are used within the counties?
Deputy Worlds.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, previously when we had the program in place, we did individual contracts with each one of the counties. They had to provide us at the end of the fiscal year with a report of how the money was utilized. Overall, the department believes that the program was very, very successful. Many of the counties were able to provide transportation to the VA hospitals by purchasing vans. Many of them were able to highlight their offices using advertisement mechanism, various radio billboards, things of that nature that drove business into their office. They were able to do innovative things that they would not necessarily would have had the resources to do so. So, yes, we do track what happens, and we do look at the outcomes. And what we're experiencing right now, sir, as the commissioner will speak to in just a minute, is just a large wave of veterans coming into offices for services that, you know, some of them are new, but, you know, reintegration is not just for the new veterans now. We still have veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam that are reintegrating, that are finally, you know, finding about services. You know, the federal VA has come up with new programs to address some of the conditions that they suffer from. And these offices are really struggling to maintain day-to-day operations. There's a need for outreach. There's a need for awareness. There's a need for additional staffing to help them with the influx of people that are coming in. So long answer to a short question. Yes, sir, we do track it.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Anderson.
The reason I ask that is because being in the military, if you didn't use your money by the end of the time allotted, you lose it. I'm wondering in the situation with the counties, if there's, say, a county that doesn't utilize all their money, you know, and there's another county or another area, region within the state that needs more money, do you guys have that capability to transfer or to take, you don't want to take from one section or one county to the next county, but I'm just saying, you know, this is going to be a flat across the board. Everybody's going to get $5,000, but okay. Here we got $5,000 that maybe they only used 80% of it. I'm just asking.
Senator Anderson, my question on top of that, but don't the counties themselves participate in these veteran service officer programs too, do they not?
Exactly, sir. The county veteran service officers are county employees, and they're upon an exclusive jurisdiction of those counties. However, there are state unfunded mandate. And as such, those counties, and many of you know from, especially in the rural areas, you know, those are very, very poor counties and resources are very, very slim. Sir, I would submit to you with your question about moving money around, we don't have the flexibility to do that under the current program. No, we cannot do that. I want to bring up, you know, just an example. Under our current grant situation or grant program with our operational grant, the smallest county would get $1,400 per grant cycle. The largest county, Hennepin, which has over 63,000 veterans, would only get, you know, about $5,600. I mean, it's really tough to do anything in those counties with minuscule amount of money. You know, the answer would be to have, you know, additional resources in this grant program in order to bolster that program, those county offices, in order for them to truly operate efficiently and more effectively. You know, the counties, and I can't speak for them, I think we do have a county veteran service officer in the room, but they are struggling. And as the commissioner spoke to earlier, you know, this is a $2 billion industry. And for every person that we, you know, help to get on the federal dime, that reduces that state dependency, that county dependency for GA or GMAC. And it opens up the door to so much more. Every person that is, you know, eligible to receive compensation or pension, they're automatically in the VA hospital to get those conditions taken care of. And, you know, what we're looking at is a healthier society. You know, the cure is in what? Treatment. Getting people to the VA for that treatment. But it also opens up the door for potential educational benefits for the veteran, potentially for the family, potential extra insurance for the families. I mean, there's just a wealth of different opportunities here just by giving them the resources to work with the veteran to get that federal application in order for them to receive entitlements.
My experience with veteran service officers in the counties that I've dealt with is that that veteran service program is a personality, and it's that veteran service officer that makes all the difference. It's not all the things he provides. It's the actual everything from driving the van down to the vet's hospital to representing the county in the local area with the vets. So. Yeah. Anything else? Anything else on the from the committee? Otherwise, General Shelto, will you wrap it up for us?
Sir, thank you. I'd like the committee to note the veteran service organizations in the audience. We could not do what we do without these service organizations, whether it be transportation. Just the Minneapolis Home alone has over 32 full-time equivalent positions in volunteer work that happens. Pheasant feeds, fish exhibition or tours out to Camp Ripley and all that other good stuff. But what I want to point out is, sir, first of all, I want to let you know that I'm very, very proud of the team that you saw here today. They're very knowledgeable, and they have made a significant difference in the last 3, 4, 5 years since we inherited, especially the homes. They are nationally recognized, and when I go out to D.C. and when Mike goes out to D.C., the doors are open to receive Minnesota, and we're very, very proud of that. And the agency, I'll close with this, is adopting a core philosophy. We have the first tier, which is those essential things that the homes have to operate efficiently, and the program and services has to ensure that our veterans get the services and benefits they need. That is being taken care of. You will also see in our program that we have some things that some people might say to you, well, why do you need a bronze marker? Hopefully you will never hear someone say, like I once heard, well, why do we have to take care of Gold Star families? So those are the things that we're doing there. And as you look at that third tier, you're seeing things like the lottery ticket, license plates. What is that for? That gives us the ability to go reach out to the county veteran service officers to identify the best practices that are out there, to work those and hopefully institutionalize them to the point that they will be incorporated into the upper two tiers. We are just reaching the cusp. For the last 5 years, the federal VA has been working extensively on technology. And I am predicting in the near 2 to 3 years, you could go into your county veteran service officer, and he will access your records from his desktop, and you can conduct the business right then and there and never have to deal with the over a billion pounds of paper that is in all of the VA systems in the United States of America. So I am very, very proud of this group, and I think your support will be a great investment for the state of Minnesota.
Well, thank you, Commissioner, and we appreciate the information that you've given us today. It was a good presentation. We recognize the governor is certainly is supporting you, and we've got some deliberations on our budget too, but. It looks like it's well laid out. With that, is there any other questions? Okay, thank you very much, sir. Rebecca Otto, the state auditor, please.
This one is not as long.
Time was hoping to be done.
Mr. Chair,
Thank you for your patience, Auditor. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
We appreciate the fact that you've been here. This is your second time.
Mr. Chair, thank you for letting me be here.
Hopefully we can take care of things and you won't have to come back.
And that would be okay, too. I'm delighted to be here, and I respect our veterans, and so I was happy to hear the state of their state and their program. So,
well, I was just, you know, I was just going to say before you started, we had opportunities today to be with the townships and yesterday and today, and one of the things that they were very complimentary about was the program that you've developed with them. And why don't you just give us about 2 or 3 minutes on that particular program? We talked about it before, but I think it's worth re-mentioning.
Certainly, Mr. Chair and members. The Office of the State Auditor, we work with local governments, and we work with lots of the towns around the state. And our towns are fairly small. They're fairly simple, and they do certain services. And we also have small cash cities as well. We developed some accounting software for them over 20 years ago, and we refer to it lovingly as CTAS. And so it's been a really effective software program for them to use, and we've really partnered with the townships as a great example of state government partnering with our local governments to create something that works for them. A lot of the products in the market are much more expensive. They are much more product than they need. And a lot of these folks are farmers, or, you know, they work in their communities, they're town supervisors, which they really are glorified volunteers. And we wanted to make sure it was a product that would meet their needs. The great thing about Minnesota is that we tend to be above average, better looking, and our kids are smarter, right? We can all agree upon that. And so we are above average in this area. Other states don't necessarily do this. There's a professor down in Tennessee that thinks Minnesota's brilliant for having this software for our small governments, because really what it does is it maintains the financial integrity of the records, and it allows them to report to us very easily. They can upload their financial information to us through this program. So it's a really important program, and right now it's kind of like old tires on your car. Kind of wear out after a while, tread wears out, and so we need to put on a new platform, and that's what we're working on.
And Auditor Otto, from what I heard from yesterday was that after you gave your presentation, everybody was just kind of, I don't know if they were awestruck, but you didn't have very many even questions. I mean, people know what that's about, and it's good to have it there, I think.
Mr. Chair, yes. Actually, what they were doing was in this packed room, the towns, standing up and giving testimonials as to how important this program was, and they really asked me, you know, they said, this is a true partnership, and I said, it sure is. And they said, can you make sure you do your part to get this through the legislature? And I said, I'll do everything I can.
That's a good segue.
Right? There we go. So I'm all about working together in government to be smart, efficient, right, use the dollars very wisely. And so the State Auditor's Office, I cannot claim to be quite as sexy as the veterans folks because our veterans are very, very important to us. Our office is really the business side of government, right? So you collect taxpayer dollars, and in return, government has to be transparent and accountable to the people. And that's our work. And you got an overview from me, which was very short and sweet, right? And this is just a recap of what I told you before. So our office, we oversee $20 billion per year spent by our local governments, and there are thousands of them. And we make sure taxpayers know where we follow the money, we show them the money, we audit the money. Sometimes we give money and to these local governments if they meet the requirements the state requires. And so our budget. It's short and sweet. We only have about 100 FTEs in the Office of the State Auditor, which is surprising when you're talking $20 billion a year. But we are a mean, lean fighting machine. Our budget, almost 90% of our budget is people. So we have very little overhead. We're proud of that. We keep our costs way down. And it's personnel that do the work, that oversight work. I'm going to start with our base budget. So this is kind of where the money is spent, and that majority of our money is spent in our audit practice division. But as you can see, we do have other divisions that get a smaller portion, and they're all very important. And I'll certainly take questions at the end if you have any. So the 14-15 base budget. I wanted to show you really the impact on the general fund that we have, the state's general fund. It's fairly small. That the huge slice of pie and that yellow slice of pie, that's all recovered through fees and reimbursements. So really our impact on the general fund is about $3.4 million. And that's where there's no fees or reimbursements. You give us the money and you don't get it back. We spend it on our people. But the rest of it, the state law requires that when we conduct an audit that we recover the costs. The only thing we don't do that with is when we do investigations, if there's been theft or misuse of public funds. I'm going to depict these things in a couple different ways for you and hopefully answer your questions. Again, base budget. This is just a breakdown by division rather than in a pie chart. It's the numbers. So the total general fund appropriation to us is 18.6 after adding in some statutory appropriations. Now I want to move into our proposed budget, and we do have some change items. And, Mr. Chair, you are familiar with that CTAS program that we're trying to make sure we can get upgraded right now on a new platform. All of our change items were included in the governor's budget. I know that's of interest to the committee. The only one that's not is our staff retention item. And the impact of those proposed change items, there's one we're not pursuing. It was some pension software. We have some pension software that I think is about 20 years old. It helps us calculate rates of return for our over 700 volunteer fire relief associations that we oversee, and we issue a report to the legislature on. The new software was going to cost between probably $20,000 and $100,000. The good news is we have a really great state employee who said, let me see if I can write an algorithm without purchasing software. The software was going to be much more than we needed. He sat down, he worked on it, and he came up with an algorithm that will do the calculations and there will be no expenditure of state funds. So we have very good people that work very hard to make sure that we are as efficient as we can be. Now this is proposed. And with our change items, you'll see the bottom line is that our general fund appropriation actually shrinks quite a bit. It goes down to $4 million. Okay? So our change items are reducing the general fund appropriation. Now, that looks like magic, but part of it is our staff retention item. Well, I'll show you some more slides, but we're working on some legislation for an enterprise fund for our audit practice division, which reduces the appropriation by quite a bit. Also, we're going to be moving JobC oversight out of the office, and so we'd give back that appropriation. We no longer get that. That's $156,000 for the biennium. Again, this is proposed. This is with our change items. It just does it now by division in terms of what our change items do to our general fund appropriation by division. Again, it's down to $4 million. I don't know if you see this very often. and this is another pictorial view of, you know, the dark blue bars for every division or activity is all recovered through fees or reimbursements. So it's just the little bit of gray that you see here and there that is not recovered through fees or reimbursements and actually has an impact on the general fund. Tap me if I say anything wrong. Matt, I'm sorry, Matt Lindemann is with me today, who does our budget, finance, accounting, technology, and so on.
Welcome, Mr. Lindemann.
So I'm sorry to introduce him earlier. I wanted to just point out for the staff retention change item, our office's people, we have really important work to do. We don't have that many people considering the amount of money that we have to oversee. And we have highly trained, sought-after, specialized staff to help us carry out our duties. When you do oversight, you want your people to be smarter than anybody else out there so you can find issues if they're out there. Our change item only allows us to maintain our current staffing levels, that's all. And so the impact of our change item is $83,000 for the biennium, which is 0.5% of our base budget. And nearly 100% of it will be recovered by offsets. So it's all money, but it's not a large amount. So this is just a recap of our change items. And staff retention, $83,000. JobZ, the general fund gets money back. The other items we have for change items have no impact on the general fund. And again, the governor has all of them in his budget except for the staff retention item. And the reason why staff retention is so small is because a lot of our staff are in the audit division, and we recover our, we have to charge for the work and, you know, and for our audit costs. Finally, I'm done.
Yes, I'd be so Senator Chamberlain has a question for you.
Oh, great. Auditor, okay.
Well, perhaps I missed something, Auditor. Where was that
$13 million from, that huge number? What was that comprised of again?
Clarify. Let me run back.
Why it dropped?
Oh, wait, right. The Out of Practice Enterprise Fund?
Yeah, sure.
Certainly, Mr. Chair and Senator Chamberlain. So one of our policy bills that we have in both the House and Senate is for the State Auditor's Office to create an enterprise fund for the Audit Division. What an enterprise fund is you track your receipts and your expenditures all in one place, your revenues and expenditures, so that so rather than right now what happens, the legislature makes an appropriation to us, okay, and then when we charge our fees, we take that money, we put it back in the general fund. This change will basically have it all running through a special revenue account or what we call an enterprise fund. It will be much more intuitive for the legislature to track when they're looking at our budget. There is a small advantage to the counties and the cities of the first class that we audit. I'll explain that briefly. We have to set our audit rates every year and let local governments know if they'll go up or down based on many factors. MMB just approved our audit rates for 2013. So MMB reviews it and says, are you doing your calculations properly? Once in a while, when we charge for our services at the end of the year, sometimes we over-recover a little bit. Sometimes we under-recover. But, if we ever over-recover, if this is making sense, Senator Chamberlain, the state gets the benefit of that over-recovery. What an enterprise fund is going to do is if there's any over-recovery, when we calculate our audit rates in the following year, our counties that we audit and those cities of the first class will get the benefit of that. So in the form of stabilized audit rates. So it's a little tiny carrot for some of these local governments that we currently audit. And I hope that makes sense. So it will no longer be a direct general fund appropriation. We will be charging fees, collecting it, putting it in there, and then we pay out of that special revenue account or enterprise fund, as I prefer to call it.
Mr. Chair?
It's
the way you're tracking and putting the money in and bringing it out.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily you all of a sudden found a way to save $17 million. It's a way of tracking and rolling through. Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
Yes. Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Otto, the transfer of the Job Z and Dairy Council oversight, where will that be transferred to?
Ms. Otto.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dames, to the legislative auditor. And so currently, Job Z used to be administered at the local level, so that would have been an appropriate program for us to oversee. Deed overhauled it, and it became administered by Deed, which is fine, but then that would be more the legislative auditor's jurisdiction. The Dairy Council, I believed, was formed last year, maybe during the session last year, I think. We weren't aware of it at the time we found it, and it said the state auditor would audit it. It looks much more like an animal for the legislative auditor. It's got Department of Ag, and it's got the U of M, so the legislative auditor is fine with that change. I don't think the appropriation follows it because they're getting language in the bill that says as resources allow. So they'll determine when it's appropriate. Job Z does sunset, I believe, in 2015. So there's not a lot of life left unless the legislature does something different. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? If not, we appreciate it. State Auditor Otto. Good presentation. Thank you again for your patience, and we'll be contacting you later. You'll be contacting us, or I'm sure we'll be communicating. How's that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks for your time. Thanks for your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Members, overview of the governor's budget recommendations continue. Next Tuesday, we'll be doing the Minnesota Management and Budget, Revenue Department, and Office of Enterprise Technology, better known as MINUTE. With that, have a good weekend, and the meeting's adjourned.
Looking forward to it.